Well, we're talking about relationships. And I think you guys are aware that the most important thing in life, I would say for everybody, but almost everybody, because I can't speak definitively, is relationships. I know guys that have made a lot of money, and they've climbed the ladder and achieved things. I can remember programmers that I know that in their pursuit to gain everything lost what was really most important to them, right? And so now their evenings were spent sleeping on a couch in their office where they were programming and with a fifth of whiskey because their family was no longer there. And normally at this time of the year, we'll do a marriage series, but my heart's been burdened for some time to take it and to kind of cast the net wider and to talk about other relationships that impact every one of us. I think when you think about life, you know, we have a tendency to think that it's always going to get easier, right? I can remember, and I see this in the lives of those that when they have their first child, their life is literally turned upside down, right? Remember those days, right? I mean, it was like this huge transformation of not being able to sleep when you want and having to take care of a new life and having to get up in the middle of the night and feed them and all the responsibilities that go with that. Your life drastically changes, and I think it's a change for the better, but nonetheless, change is not always easy, right? And you think it's got to get easier. Right? Once the baby starts sleeping through the night, it's going to get easier. Some of you are shaking your head, no. Are you party poopers? Yeah, you're just the reality of it, right? Then they learn how to walk. I mean, you can't wait for your kids to walk. I mean, you're kind of encouraging them, pushing them. And then once they walk, you realize you've unleashed a monster, right? Because now they can go everywhere and they can go there instantly. I didn't know those little boogers could move so quick. Well, they could do it when they could crawl, but they can especially do it once they start walking. And life is filled with those transitions as parents. I can remember, how many of you taught your kids to ride a bike, right? You get there, you know, and if you were like me, you would hold the handlebar with one hand and the back of the seat with the other, and you'd kind of put them through the paces, right? But eventually the bike was moving faster than you could, right? And one of the most scariest feelings of a parent is letting go of the bike. Because you know that there could be success or there could be catastrophe, right? Scary, scary. And there's many of these situations in life that are like that. I can remember teaching my kids to drive. I got the responsibility in our home. Carol and I, we divvy up things. And so she talked to the girls about all the girl stuff, and I got to teach the kids to drive. Sounded like a fair deal to me. But I'll never forget one time we're driving along, and we ran through a stop sign. This was with one of my girls. Man, my heart was beating. I was thankful there was no cars coming the other way. I still remember that intersection, you know, and then so you teach them how to drive, and then there's the day they get their driver's license, and you know what's going through their mind? They want to go for a cruise, right? But the hardest thing is giving over the keys, right? Because you're not going to be there, and they're going to be on their own. One of the challenges that's a challenge for us is that then as we get to having adult kids is the challenge of being able to let go. And the fear there is no different than when they first rode that bicycle by themselves and when they went for the first drive. But it's that reality that now as the parent, you're releasing them to be adults in their lives. And it can be a tough stage because of several reasons, and many times what happens is that instead of the relationship getting better, it has a tendency to get worse. And so today I want to just talk about making in-laws not outlaws. It was interesting, as I've been reading in the Bible and as I've been studying specifically, but even as I was reading in my devotions this past week, I came across just a number of passages that jumped off the page that reminded me that this is nothing new. Those that we know in the Bible dealt with the tensions of adult relationships with family. And specifically, I'm talking about the parent-adult-child relationships. Let me just read some of these to you to give you a little bit of feel that when you struggle with this, that you are not alone and you're in good company. In fact, the first passage comes from Genesis 26:34. I've included all the verses there on your teaching outline. We'll come back to that question in a moment, Elizabeth, that we have up there at the screen. But it's this. It says, when Esau was 40 years old, does everybody know who Esau is? Right? You got Abraham. And Abraham was the father. He was the one that God appointed to be the head of the Jewish people. He took this family and makes him into a great nation. So you move from Abraham, and Abraham had a son, right? He had two sons, which are behind the cause of all the conflict that we're having in the world today between Islam and the rest of the world, right? And so you have Ishmael, and you have Isaac. Now, Ishmael was the product of Abraham and Sarah trying to help God out. Remember, Sarah said, hey, I can't give you a child. And in the culture of that day, it was perfectly acceptable for a woman that could not bear children for her husband, because that was the most important thing, to say, hey, would you take my mate, one of my servants, and have a child for me through her? Well, the problem is that created all kind of issues, as you can only imagine, because Hagar, Ishmael's mom, Ishmael was the son that was born. Hagar became a little bit proud because she was the one that was able to produce the son for Abe, right? And so there was some jealousy that went on there and conflict. And finally, to the point where Abraham was forced, because of the conflict with his wife, to send Hagar and her son, which he didn't want to do, packing. Okay? And God makes a promise that he's going to be a great nation and there's going to be a tension between the two peoples, and we're living with that today. It's amazing how politicians try to fix that. I always marvel at that, trying to fix that, what God says is going to be a problem that only the Lord Jesus Christ can be able to resolve. But anyways, so then Isaac married a gal by the name of Rebecca. Great story, right? And then she had twin boys. Anybody know what their names are? Esau and Jacob, right? And Esau was the first one out, and Jacob was the second one out. Now, there's a lot more of this story, but I want to get to this part here. And so as you come to your text, what you notice there in Genesis 26:34, and I want you to read between the lines, and I want you to kind of feel what's being said. When Esau was 40 years old, he took Judith, the daughter of Beeri, the Hittite, to be his wife, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite. And they made life wonderful for Isaac and Rebekah. What does it say? They became outlaws, right? It was a very painful experience. You know, sometimes your children will make choices that are not the best, and it can bring grief. That's the situation here. I think in some ways, maybe the parents might have compounded that a little bit, but who knows? In the next passage, we see that even Jesus was challenged with the relationships with his mom. And in the account that's given to us in John chapter 2, it's the account of a wedding that he attended at Cana of Galilee. And I'll just read it for you here. It says, on the third day, there was a wedding in Cana in Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Her name is Mary, right? Mom is there. Okay? And Jesus also was invited to the wedding with his disciples. And when the wine ran out, Mary said to him, hey, they have no wine. She was expecting him to solve the problem, right? What's his response? His response is, woman, what does this have to do with me? It's not my problem. But mom is like, knowing that he's special and who he is, hey, you got to do something here, Jesus. You got to fix this. You see the tension? There's a little bit of a tension. Now, Jesus obviously respected his mom, and he did what was right, and he fixed the problem, right? But there was a tension that was there. Here's another account from the life of Jesus with between him and his brothers. It's in Mark chapter 3, 31 through 33. He's teaching. He's doing what he's supposed to be doing. And his mother and his brothers came, and they're standing outside, and they sent to him and called to him. So his family showed up, and we know from another account that his brothers thought he was cuckoo. They thought he was nuts. Okay, they did not believe that he was the Messiah. Okay, sometimes the hardest people to convince are family, and we see that here. And so now the mother and the brothers came, and maybe they thought he was working too hard. Maybe they were going to rescue him, right? Or they knew what was best. But then Jesus goes on to remind him that, hey, you know, my mother and my brothers are those that are with me in my ministry. But what we want to see there is there were tensions. There were tensions. Sometimes they were not handled properly, and other times they are, and relationships are built. Another one that you have there in your text is known as the parable of the prodigal son, right? A man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, give me the share of the property that is coming to me. Now, let me just say is that in the text, there's only just a handful of sentences to describe the background of what's going on. I think the dad knew where the heart of the son was, just like every parent does. If you're a parent, you know the heart of your kids. If you're honest, and I think the dad knew that his son was heading down the wrong path and making poor choices, right? And what does he do? He honors the wish. Why? Because at some point, little Johnny's got to grow up. Little Johnny has to come to the place of taking responsibility for his own lives. And the longer the dad keeps covering from him only prolongs the situation longer. And what happens in this parable? He goes off, he parties away the inheritance that his dad gave him, and finally, when the money's gone, his friends leave him, and he hits bottom, right? Which, when you read it, if it's your child, sounds like the worst thing that could ever happen, doesn't it? I mean, you don't want your kids to ever have to go through any difficulties or ever face those kind of things in their lives. But yet many times that's when the greatest work of God is done in their hearts and lives. It's when they come to the end of themselves and reap the consequences for the poor choices that they've made. And in this situation, the guy comes to his senses and realizes, you know what, here I am trying to eat from the scraps that are left for the pigs, and the servants in my dad's house are better fed than clothed than this. I'm going to go home and make it right. And guess what he does? He goes home and he makes it right. And the father isn't like, well, what about all of this? No, the father's like, welcome home, son. I love you. Right? What a beautiful picture. But again, is that you have to, as you talk about, in this case, the parable, you got to think about, these are, if it was real people, think about the emotions that were involved in a little bit of the backstory. And then there's this beautiful story from the Old Testament in the book of Ruth. And you know the story of Ruth, right? Ruth was she a Moabitess, right? And she married one of, my mind just went blank. What was Ruth's mom's name? Naomi. Naomi's son. So Naomi and her husband, they had to leave Israel because the financial situation was very bad. And so they left, and they went to a foreign area, a foreign country to find work, right? Her two sons ended up marrying gals from that community, one of whom was Ruth. And then her husband died. Well, because her family was there, she stayed. And the every indication from the text is that they had a great family relationship between the parents and the kids. There was this great family relationship. and we don't know all of it. I'm sure it wasn't perfect, but they took care of mom. The guys took care of their mom, their widow mom. And then, about 10 years after the father died, the two men died. And so you have these three widow women. And in that culture, that was a major issue, a major challenge of how to support themselves and what to do. And at that point, Ruth decides that she's going to head back to her family roots. And she's of an age where she can no longer marry again and have sons, because in that culture, then the widowed daughter-in-law would then have the right of marrying another son in the family to maintain the inheritance and stuff. That all sounds kind of weird to us today, but that's the way it was, okay? And she says, hey, I'm too old. I'm not getting married again. I can't have any kids. And even if I did, by the time they grew up to the right age, it wouldn't work, right? And so she says, Ruth says, why don't you go back to your families and do that, right? And so one of the daughter-in-laws, after following Ruth, said, you know what, I think that's good advice. I'm going to do that. Or following Naomi does that. And then, but Ruth said, and this is, go to the next verse. Ruth said, do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. And it goes on. What do we see here? We see here an incredible relationship between mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. Right? To the point where when the cards are down, that they're going to stick together. And by the way, for those of you that may not remember, is that Ruth then goes back to Israel, and she winds up marrying a man named Boaz, and she, in God's providence, becomes one of the heirs in the line of Jesus Christ. Wow. Wow. Talk about how God can work. So the question that we began with on the front of your outlines there that I had, how are your parent-child, adult-children relationships? I know they're not perfect, but how are they? And I think that in most of our lives and situations that they could use some work, some improvement. I love this verse in Proverbs 17:6. Would you read it with me here? Can I get it on the screen? Can we go back to Proverbs 17:6? Would you read this with me? Grandchildren are the crown of the aged, and the glory of children is their fathers. Now you read that and you think, I don't understand this language. It's a little bit confusing to me. Let me simplify it to you. Let me put it into 21st century Port Orchard English. Essentially what this is saying is, where it says grandchildren are the crown of the aged, it's basically encouraging adult children to make your parents proud of you. What it's saying to those parents of those grandchildren, it's saying, hey, make your parents proud. Do a good job raising your kids and with your marriage and with life so that the grandparents are proud of you and the grandkids. Okay? That's a great goal, isn't it? To say, hey, we want to make our parents proud. But it's a two-way street. Look at what the other part of the verse says. And the glory of children is their fathers. And this term, fathers, is probably more generically talking about parents, but in that culture, the fathers were kind of the focal point. And I think we could apply this more generally. And so the application here would be, parents, make your children proud. Wow. What a challenge. What an admonition. Unfortunately, what I see happening so often is that these two maxims being ignored. I see children, adult children, that are not concerned about making their parents proud through their choices. And in turn, I see parents that are not acting in a way that would make their children proud of them. And when that happens, there's a wedge that begins to come into that parent-child relationship and divide them. I was reminded of a joke this morning that I heard before. What's the difference between in-laws and outlaws? Do you know what it is? Outlaws are wanted. Yeah, outlaws are wanted. So let's talk about this. Let's kind of just, in the time we have left, I want to just do something very practical. I want to look at one verse, and then I want to just give you just a number of insights on, first of all, to parents of adult children, and then to adult children. And the first one is this. For those of you that are parents of adult children, is that you have to respect your child as an adult. Just like when you let that bicycle go, just like when you handed over the keys to the car, when they become an adult, you basically are now acknowledging that they are adults and you have to let them go. So often the challenge is, and especially for moms, it seems to be greater, is to try to hold on to the scenario. And they will always be your child, but they are now an adult. And what's more specific here is, and I've noticed this over the years, is that whenever there's conflict between the adult parents and the adult children, they never blame their own child. They blame the child-in-law. The spouse becomes the devil incarnate or the wicked, evil witch of the West. When the reality is, when a couple gets married, they're one. Look at this next verse with me in Genesis 2:24, and I know you've heard it before, and I know you know it, but it speaks so powerfully that we need to be reminded of it. Remember that God created Eve as a helpmate for Adam. And then God conducted the first wedding service in the Garden of Eden, bringing Adam and Eve together. And then as he brings them together, as he unites them, holding that first marriage, he says this, therefore, a man shall, what? What does it say? I want you to circle that. It says he will leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and they will become one flesh. I want to ask you something. What does it mean to leave? What is the Bible talking about when it says that the man or the adult child or the child that has reached the place of adulthood is going to leave, especially in this case in marriage? Well, first of all, I need to tell you that it's talking about establishing a new family. That's what God is saying. He's saying is that when your children get married, they change their status from being under you and under your umbrella that God has designed to starting their very own family and being under a new umbrella. Did you catch that? So what does it mean to leave? It could mean they need to leave geographically, although in that day, the kids lived in the same house. They would just add another room. Now, I think that today, sometimes a geographical distance is a very healthy thing. Not necessary, but it can be very healthy because parents and kids have a hard time letting go. It could mean, some would say, well, maybe it means to let go or to leave emotionally. I think there's still that relationship there. You're not going to abandon that, but there is a change that takes place as they become peers rather than your children, which they still are, but they move into a status of adults. But really what it's talking about here, it's talking about establishing that new family. So that means is that when a father escorts his daughter down the aisle, which I had the privilege of doing this summer with my second daughter, and which Jess's dad had the privilege of doing this summer as Joey was married, what happens is that when he comes up front here, in our culture, the pastor said, who gives this woman to be married to this man? And what's the response, guys? Her mother and I, right? What are they doing? They're saying is that it's a very symbolistic gesture, but as he steps back and the groom steps in to take the arm, what he's saying is that my son And my daughter and my or your daughter are now establishing a family of their own under God. Which means is that they are no longer under your authority. They're to respect you. We'll talk about that. But they are on their own. And let me tell you something. Every conflict I've come across, I can't say every, just about every conflict I've come across where there's tension between the parents and the kids, it's been because this scriptural truth has been ignored or violated. It's a failure to recognize the independence of your child or your child or your child's spouse as adults. There's some other practical things that kind of flow out of this. Let me just kind of work you through these quickly. Here's the second one. If you give, and I'm speaking specifically of financial gifts. If you give, give with no strings attached. It's easy for parents. It's natural to help out. I mean, our parents have helped Carol and I out, and it's been a huge blessing. We've tried to be there to help our kids out. I think if you can help your kids out, it's a wonderful thing. But something insidious can happen when you help your kids out. Many times, unaware to us, when we give the money, there's a string that goes back to us. Because we helped you with this, we now expect that you will be here for Thanksgiving or Christmas. You see, when you give to your kids, you got to give without any strings attached. You got to be wise in your giving, but you need to give with no strings attached. Here's the third thing. Let them solve their own problems. It's so easy for us at an older station of life where maybe we have a better financial situation than we had when we were younger or their age. Maybe we have more knowledge and experience. And it's very easy for parents to jump in and to try to fix the problem without letting the kids fix it. And I would encourage you to let them solve their own problems. And I'm going to develop this a little bit more in a moment, but think about that. It's that they're the new unit. Let them work through those things. Here's the deal. Every one of you that's been married can think back to challenges and struggles you went through as a young couple. Those struggles made your marriage stronger. Am I right? Not having money to do whatever you wanted to do was not a detraction from helping your relationship to grow closer to each other and closer to God. And yet so often when we whip out the card or we whip out the cash, we're hindering or delaying the growth process for our adult children. Let them solve their own problems. Here's number four. Go ahead and write this down. This is an important one. Remember, they tell each other everything. I this blows my mind. Parents will say to their kid something negative about their spouse. Guess what they talk about when they go home? What a jerk you are and what you said about them. Yeah, come on. Have you guys ever done that? I've done that. Derogatory comments have been made about my wife. Did that engender me to my parents? No, it did not. Why? Because they were attacking my sweetheart, right? And you got to realize that you got to take control of the lip and the tongue. So often we blow things up with the things we say in a moment of frustration. Just remember, everything you tell or say to your child will be said to their spouse. Here's number five. Don't burn any bridges you might need to cross later. Think about the relationship long term. I'm going to share an illustration. I want to be careful because I have adult kids, and I don't want to violate our relationship because I love our kids and our relationship. But we've had our kids stay with us, and we love to help out our kids. But you know that anytime you put two families in the same home, it's tough. It's tough. If we're honest, it's tough. Our oldest daughter, when she was pregnant with twins, her husband was in medical school in Grenada. And so because of the twin pregnancy, and it was high risk, she had to stay here in the States. They did not have facilities in Grenada for prenatal delivery. So she stayed in the States, and she stayed with us. And Carol and I went through an intentional conversation of what's the best option. And one of the options, might shock some of you, one of the options was to help our daughter get into an apartment. Now, why would we do that? Let me tell you why we would do that. Why would we take money that we didn't have or scrape together money that we couldn't afford to help her get established in an apartment? Why would we do that? Because we value the relationship. I would hate to have the relationship blow up because she was living with us and it wasn't working out. It would be more valuable to me and to Carol to scrape together the money, to put them in a place of their own, and to help them out that way. Why? Our bank account isn't being helped by this, but we're looking at the long-term relationship with our kids. And so there's those conversations that go on. Be careful not to make decisions that are going to burn bridges that you might need to cross later. Because once the damage is done, it's a lot harder to take it back in. I could tell you another story. Carol's dad passed away. They were lifetime missionaries to India. Wonderful people. Off the charts. They're 11 on a scale to 10. All right? 1 to 10. And so her dad and her mom bought a condo in Purdy, and then after he passed away, she wanted to go back to India and continue to minister. Wonderful decision. It worked out where we rented the condo from her. Okay? Good deal for us, good deal for her. You know, we made her mortgage payment, paid the utilities, took care of the place, and she didn't have to worry about it, and she got to go to India. Well, she came home. And Carol and her mom love each other, but I'm going to tell you something. There was some tension. It's okay if I share this, isn't it? I already did. Oops. But here's the issue. This is what I want to get across, is that here's a mother and a daughter that have a fantastic relationship. But living together as families in the same home, there was tension because they did things differently. And eventually what it came down to was the fact of me as the husband making a decision to say, you know what, we're going to go rent a place. So we scraped together the money and we rented a place in Tacoma. But you know the long-term aspect of that is? We continue to have a fabulous relationship with Carol's mom. You see, that's what I'm talking about. You have to be thinking about the relationships because that's where the priority is. Here's number 6. Don't take sides in a fight. I love Carol's mom for this. One time when we first were married, Carol and I got into a fight. She called her mom to whine about how terrible my husband I was, and I am a pretty bad husband. And the first thing her mom said, stop. I don't want to hear it. You and Joe are married, you go work it out. You know what happens when you take side in a fight? Then when they make up, you're the bad guy, right? Yeah, you guys are all shaking your heads. You know what I'm talking about, because the other spouse has a great memory they never forget, right? That you threw them under the bus. Yeah. Number 7 is respect their privacy. You know what? Don't just show up. Call ahead of time. They might have plans. They might be developing their relationship. Wink, wink. You know what I'm talking about, right? Respect their privacy. Number 8, this goes back to what I talked about earlier. Only give advice when you're asked. You know, as a parent, you got a lot of opinions. You got a lot of advice to offer. But only give advice when you're asked. Otherwise, zip the lip, even if it draws blood. It'll be for the benefit of the relationship. Number 9, invest in establishing a relationship with the spouse-in-law. You already have a relationship with your child. But if it's going to go well, you got to develop a relationship with their spouse. And you need to work at that. And then number 10 is be flexible with holiday expectations. You know, the crazy part is when a couple gets married, you actually are blending two families together. You're blending your son, your family, with another family, the family of your child's spouse. And each of those families have traditions and expectations, and you have to work that out. Be flexible. My encouragement to adult parents is to make your wishes known. Hey, we'd love to have you over for Thanksgiving dinner, but if it doesn't work, we understand, just let us know, right? And be willing to mean what you say. And trust that your kids will work out what's best as they have to weave through all of these dynamics to make it work. Don't try to force your will upon them. Let them, as the new couple, right, work that out. All right. Let's kind of talk quickly to the adult children. One of the things today that I see happening as often is that there's a significant amount of disrespect for mom and dad. And as you know, mom and dad do a tremendous amount for their kids. They do. And the Bible says in Exodus 20, verse 12, it says, honor your father and mother that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. Now, let me kind of refresh your memory if you weren't here last week, is that this is the fifth commandment in the Ten Commandments. The first four commandments deal with man's relationship with God. Do you know what the first thing that God says when he begins to talk about a relationship with others? He says this right here, honor your father and mother that your days may be long in the land. Do you know what that word honor means? It means a lot of things. It means taking care of them when they get older. And that day, children were the retirement for their parents. That all factors in. But it also means to respect them. And I want to encourage you, this is the first insight for adult children, is respect your parents. No, they don't think like you do, and you think different, and they do things differently than you do. But respect them. Respect their wishes. Try to be a blessing to them in how you handle things rather than just saying, forget about you, we're going to do what we want to do, right? It's the idea of honoring them. Now, let me talk about something here that's really important. I want to fit this in. I want to talk to you about two words. I want to talk to you about duty, and the second word is devotion. When it comes to honoring your parents, you probably will fall into one of two categories. You either will be doing it out of duty, or you'll be doing it out of devotion. Now, duty is what it sounds like. You are basically doing your moral obligation to respect your parents. The base of that is to make sure that they're fed and clothed and have shelter. Doesn't mean they're living with you, but it means is that they're taken care of. You take responsibility for that. Now, when you serve out of duty, it's not easy. And many times there have been sin issues in the past that make respecting parents very difficult. I understand that. If you need to talk about that, we can unpack that later. Talk to me. But you still have a responsibility to honor them out of duty because they're your parents. Okay? But what we want to shoot for is the devotion side, right? That's when it's fun to do it. That's when it's fun to be with them, when it's fun to do things for them, when it's fun to serve them. You see the difference here is that, yes, we're obligated to respect them, but we don't want to live there. We want to live here over devotion, and hopefully the parents are parenting in such a way that it's causing you as adult children to respect them. Now, even if they don't, that doesn't give you a pass to kind of blow them off and ignore them. You don't. God says you got to honor your father and mother. It doesn't qualify it. But if you have great parents, what a blessing it is to be able to serve them out of devotion. And I would encourage you to make it a point, pray about how can I respect my parents? And it sometimes that involves, you know, spending time with them on holidays or doing different things. It's a lot of different aspects. Here's a second insight for adult children. This can get missed sometimes, but I think I need to say it, and I think I need to say it so that your parents, if they're listening or here, hear this, and it's this. Put your spouse before your parents. Do you get that? Put your spouse before your parents. Mom and Dad, when your little Johnny gets married to little Susie, she comes first. Why? Because they're the new umbrella, right? Put your parents first. I mean, put your kids first, your spouse first. Thinking ahead. Put your spouse first, right? And that becomes a non-negotiable. Talk about things, work them through, because you are now a team. Number three is work to give equal time to both sets of parents. What normally happens is that one set of parents is easier to be with than the other, and this is assuming you have equal access to both of them. But you really need to kind of respect both sets of parents and give them time. It's easy to say, oh yeah, we like being with your family, so we're going to spend our time over here, but then we ignore the other family, and that's not right. Okay? Number four, work out your issues. Work out your issues. Listen, I can't guarantee that every time you sit down with your parents or parents-in-law over an issue, it's going to work out, but many times it will. If anything, it'll communicate understanding and help them to understand your position. But I will tell you that if you don't talk to them, it will not get worked out, and it will only become a bigger issue. So when there's an issue, pray about it. And if it's something that you can't let go and it's impacting your relationship or your spouse's relationship with your parents, have the talk. Sit down with them and talk it out. Okay? Treat them like you would want to be treated. If they have an issue with you, have them talk it out. In fact, one of my son-in-laws, we were Christmas shopping, and he and I were at the mall. And I just told him, I said, listen, I know our families are probably different. I said, the Parkinson's rule with the cards on the table, okay? So here's my commitment to you. If I ever have an issue with you, I'm going to come and talk to you personally. And all I ask in response is that if you ever have an issue with me or Carol, that you would come and talk to us so that we have a chance to make it right and work things out. Do you see what that begins to do? It begins to realize that these two families are different, they're unique, and we have to communicate to talk through these differences so that we can grow together and learn about each other, and the relationship can mature. Here's number five, don't take advantage of your parents. Your parents would never say this because they love you, but don't take advantage of them. And God will give you wisdom on that. It's a wonderful blessing to have parents that help. And I think it's great when parents are in a position to do that. But be careful that you're not taking advantage of them. And here's another side of this that I see quite a bit. Your parents will never say this because they love you and they love your grandkids. But they really don't want to be childcare full time. They really don't. They will do whatever for their grandkids because they love them, but they don't want to be childcare full time. And just be aware of that. Just be aware. There's nothing wrong with them helping out for a season, or if you're in a situation where life has kind of dealt you a bad scenario and you got nowhere else to turn. That's what family's there for. But you know, if both you and your husband are working and making money and you're expecting the parents to provide free childcare, second think that. Because what's happening is that your parents more than likely are feeling trapped, whether they'll tell you or not. And they're losing the privilege of being grandma and grandpap because they're now having to be care providers for their grandkids. And it brings up a whole host of other issues. Then they have to discipline them. Which no grandparent wants to discipline their grandkids. Come on. Their role in life is to spoil them and let you deal with the problems they create. Right? Yeah, come on. Don't ruin what it means to be a grandparent. You know, they get that season of life. But yeah, just Don't take advantage of them. Here's number six. Honor your parents' house rules. Honor their house rules. This is simple, but when you go back into their house, even though you're an adult and you make your own decisions, guess what? Mom and dad still have house rules. You need to honor those. In our house, one of the big things is we have dinner together. One of our kids came home from college, and they were used to a college schedule where they would basically stay up, you know, until oh dark 30 in the morning, and then they would sleep all morning, right? Right? And so they came home, and they would eat lunch. They would eat breakfast around lunchtime and eat lunch just before dinner, and then when we sat down for dinner, like, oh, we're not hungry. So we had a little father. It was a daughter. Daughter talk. Joey's here, so I want to make sure I don't incriminate him. Father-daughter talk, right? And I said, hey, you know what? I want you to be there at the dinner table. She was an adult. She could make her own choices. But you know what? Those are the house rules. She said, well, I'm not hungry. I said, well, you don't have to eat. Just come and sit with us and be a part of the family. And my daughter was awesome. She said, okay, Dad, if that's what you want. Didn't give me any flack, any lip. And guess what? We had a great time, right? But you got to honor your parents' house rules. If you got to take your shoes off, even though you don't do that in your house, take your shoes off. If they don't drink, don't bring alcohol into their home. Honor your parents' house rules. It's their house. And in turn, they need to honor your rules when they come into your house, right? That's what it's all about, is a peer. You wouldn't go into your friends' homes and act like, expect them to have it set up and act like it is in your house. And when they come to your house, they would not expect it to be like it is in their house, and they would honor your specifics. Same thing is true for adult kids and their parents. Number eight is this. Go ahead and write, just kind of focus on this one. Only ask for advice if you want it. Only ask for advice if you want it. Again, this is playing with the cards on the table. Sometimes, I know of a situation like this where an adult child would suggest something or ask the parent something. Sounded like, what's your advice on this? And some of you have been there, but they really don't want your advice. They just want you to approve what they're doing and the decision they've made, right? Now, if you're an adult, you can make that decision. But if you ask me for my advice, be prepared that I might not agree with the decision you're making. Now, I'll do it in a kind way, and I'll be encouraging and supportive in that, and I try to tell my kids, hey, what is the Lord leading you to do, and all of that. But the point is, don't ask for advice if you don't want it. Honor your parents in that. And when you do need the advice, because they've got a lot to offer, then make sure you listen and take it to heart. And then here's number nine. I'm going to have the worship team come at this point. Here's number nine. Enjoy the time you have with your parents, because it's too short. It's too short. You know what? There was a season when, I can say this with a good heart, is there was a season where Carol's mom, we were helping her out because we lived close to her. And we didn't have any money. And it was really tight, but yet Carol's mom didn't drive, and so she needed somebody to drive her around, which meant that Carol had to do that. And on top of that, she was a coupon shopper. And so she, to save 25 cents, would go to this store and buy that with Carol driving her. Then to save another 30 cents, she would drive across town to that store and buy that. And then to save another 15 or 20 cents, she would drive over here to this part of town to buy this or that. I struggled with that. But you know what? We decided to honor Mom in that. And you know, she's no longer with us. Because a few years after that, she would go home to be with the Lord Jesus Christ. And I'll tell you something. We now cherish the sacrifices that we made for her. Because that time is all too short. So if you're adult children, savor the time you have with your parents. If there's conflicts and tensions, try to work it out. At least sit down and talk it over. Try to negotiate a truce. I'm sure they're hurting and you're hurting. It's a two-way street. But there's so much more. There's so much more in life, and these relationships are more than anything that the culture can give us, because that's the way that God designed it. And so back to Proverbs 17:6, it says, "Grandchildren are the crown of the aged," which says, "Children, make your parents proud. And the glory of children is their fathers." And that says to parents, make your children proud. Would you just bow your heads for a moment? More than likely, you've got a relationship in your life that could use some work. I can't speak for the other side of the equation, but I can speak to you and ask you, would you do something about it? There's a lot more that could be said here. Maybe there's a need for some greater clarification. I'll be happy to meet with you, talk things over. But would you be willing to take a step forward to make the relationship better? Listen, don't feel guilty because of missed opportunities in the past. Those are gone. They're gone. You can't change that. Don't beat yourself up. Don't let the devil beat you up over it. But you can make a difference today and tomorrow and the days ahead. Would you own that? Would you be the kind of person as a parent that parents in such a way that your kids really are proud of you? When they think of somebody they look up to, they could talk about you as their dad or you as their mom. And kids would, adult kids, would you be the kind of people that your parents would just be so proud of you? And there would be just that continual effort to work on the relationship, because we're people. We have desires and we don't always respond the right way, and we say the worst things at the wrong times, which only make things worse. But you know, that's where grace and forgiveness come in. That's really the oil that keeps relationships from burning up. Lord, I just pray that you would just help us to pinpoint that relationship in our lives and then make a decision to take some of the things that have been shared today, or maybe something else that you've laid on our hearts, and to work at restoring, rescuing this relationship with our parents, or if we're parents, with our kids. Thank you for the time and your word today. Encourage us this week. Use us for your honor and glory, we pray in Jesus' name. And everyone said, amen.